Jaita Gadan Harshi Vasati Gora Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gora Gopina Shaima Kunda Radha Kunda Giddhi Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gora Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Book. Are the books here? Are they here? Okay, yeah. It's like, do I have to get the book on my phone? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 By the way, it's very extraordinary that Srila Prabhupada gave us that mantra to chant. That mantra was given by Narada Muni to Dhruva. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, sorry, this is related to some work I'm doing for the GBC right now. Prabhupada says in the purport, generally only brahmanas are allowed to chant the pranava, the omkar. He says that by the grace of the spiritual master, this mantra can be given to anybody who is actually surrendered to Krishna. Vedic mantras, traditionally, they were only given to people born in Brahmana families with all of the samskaras and so forth. Srila Prabhupada is very kind, and he's taking the Shastric injunctions that a Vaishnava surpasses the position of a Brahmana. And so therefore, anybody who becomes a Vaishnava is allowed to chant these, the pranava mantra, the omkara. So today is the 6th of July, 2020, in Hillsborough, North Carolina. And I was debating what to do for class today, since we're all so very much absorbed in the passing of Bhakti Tirthaswami. And I was meditating on a statement that Bhakti Tirthaswami wrote in one of his books at the end, how that he had two families. One, his spiritual family here, who were asking him to stay, and the other was his spiritual family in the spiritual world, who were asking him to go there. And I was thinking about how, you know, in the traditional system in India generally, not always, generally, when there's a marriage, the bride goes to become part of the husband's family. Not always, like the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his son-in-law became part of his family. Sometimes it's like that. But generally, the woman would go to the husband's family. In the video, the Ramayana, they have, I don't know, like at least two episodes, isn't it, of Sita crying to leave her family to go to Ayodhya. So Bhakti Tirthaswami was explaining that these two worlds are calling. Of course, the devotee, even in this world, is always in the spiritual world. But I thought it would be very appropriate today to read these verses about the glories of the spiritual world. A Prabhupada says that we should be captivated by this information. So on the one hand, we should want to be in this world to serve Srila Prabhupada here, to be on the battlefield, to be preaching. But ultimately, we should be captivated by the information of the spiritual world, which is our real home. And hopefully, eventually, we'll call all of us so strongly that we are willing to sever the ties here, externally speaking, and go there. So I thought that would be very appropriate. Just like when the young girl goes to her husband's family home, I'm sure that the parents are always eager to get news. How is my daughter doing? What's going on there? What are the activities in her husband's house? What's happening? Or somebody goes away to college and you want to get news. We want to get news of the spiritual world, what all of our associates are doing there, what all of our friends are doing there with Krishna. So in that mood, I thought this would be very appropriate. So this is Canto 10, Chapter 18. Lord Balaram slays the demon Pralamba. Although the first verses are just about the description of Vrindavana in the summer. So text 1. Shri Suka Uvacha Ata Krishna Parivritto Nati Bir Muditam Babi Nati Bir Muditat Mabi Anugiyamano Vyavishad. Practiced that and practiced it, how to make it so it wasn't an extra syllable. Yes, thank you. Anugiyamanavishad. Rajam Gokula Manditam. Here we have the joy of the Lord according to the different seasons. Grishma Nama. So it's explained that there are six seasons. We think here in Hillsboro there are four seasons. I lived for a while in Hawaii. There was utmost two seasons. And that was stretching it a little bit, but we kind of had two seasons. Right? Champaka, you were telling me about the different sorts of insects and flowers, right? Different times of year. But Nilamadava Devi Dasi, who's part of this community, she lived in Mayapur Dham for a while, and she made a graphic of the six Indian seasons. And she was saying how the concept of four seasons is very, it's a bias by people who live in temperate hemispheres, that there are different seasons in different parts of the world. And in the spiritual world, Krishna has these six seasons. So they not only exist in India, but they exist in Goloka Vrindavan. And the Sanskrit names for them are Vasanta, Grishma, which is what we're reading about now, Varsha, Sharad, Hemanta, and Shishira. So Vasanta is spring, and Grishma is the summer, where in India it gets very, very hot. So right now we're kind of on the, kind of leaving summer in India. And then there is Varsha, which is the monsoon, the rainy season. So one time when I was in India during the rainy season, and I was leaving from Mumbai, and these devotees were driving me to the airport, I was coming here, and they said, is it the rainy season now in America? And I said, we don't have a rainy season. And for about 5 minutes, they're just silent in the car. And then they said, well, how do you get enough rain? You know, I was living here in Hillsboro at the time. I said, we get plenty of rain. And then they're quiet for a long time. And they said, well, when does it rain? I said, it can rain any time. But again, there's like this 5 minutes of utter silence. And I say, well, how do you know when to bring an umbrella? You know, Atmaman Manyate Jagat, very hard to understand someone else's reality. So anyway, in the rainy season, that's the main time in India. Of course, it can rain other times of the year, too. Then Sharad. Sharad is the autumn season. Then Hemanta. Hemanta is November, December. So this is when it's starting to get cold, right? In the morning, you have to wear something for the cold weather. In the middle of the day, it's warm. And then the Shishira. So the Shishira is generally translated. The translations we have, like of Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Govindalilamrita, they're always translating it as dewy. And I was bewildered, you know, what is this dewy? I just meant dewy. So this last time when I was in India, I was there in January, because this is like the January, February, somewhat December, January, February. Each of these seasons is two lunar months. And it's like, oh, it's foggy. They meant the foggy season. And you go out in the morning and everything's full of fog. So I recently wrote an article for Back to God, and it should be published, I think, maybe in September. I'm taking a morning walk by Govardhan in the fog. You know, what it was like going out early in the morning in the foggy season, you know, when it's really cold and you can hardly see anything. And I'd walk on the inner path, I'd walk through the gate, and then I would take a right on the inner path at Govardhan. And that part of the inner path, practically nobody goes on it because of the way the fencing is. And you can go like under these trees with this solid path, but you can hardly see Giriraj. You have to get up really, really close. to see Giriraj. And everybody has, all the local people have fires on the side of the road. So this is the foggy season. So Krishna enjoys these varieties. Krishna enjoys these varieties. In the spiritual world, there are all six seasons. So with these pastimes here in this planet, we have, you know, a cycle of seasons, and the different pastimes are explained. This, not all the pastimes are designated. I'm in the process of writing a book with a friend of mine in Belgium on the pastimes according to the seasons. What pastimes happen in each forest, what pastimes happen in each season. So I've been meditating on this now for a few months, one of the things I'm working on here. And many of the pastimes are not designated according to season. So it'll just say one time, one day. No, it's not clear. But some of them, like here with Kaliya, is happening in the summer season. The fire by the Kaliya Lake and this killing of Prolambasura, this all happens, it's designated that it happens in the summer season. So what pastimes happen in the spring season? Holi festival is particularly spring season. What pastimes happen in the summer? So we, Jiva Goswami was saying one of them. And yes,
swimming
pastimes, and the boat pastimes. Although we usually do the boat leela in Vrindavan, I think in March, but March, April, yeah, it really should be. Yeah, it probably should be a little bit later. So we have, and we have the whole boat pastime. Right, Chabak, I remember you did that dance drama on the boat pastime. So that happens in the summer. And then what about in the rainy season? So I wrote a book about this. The Julian Yatra takes place in the rainy season because when you're swinging, that acts like a fan. Right? It's moving the air. So you can, if you're hot and sticky, because rainy season is very humid when you're hot and sticky, you want a fan on you, and instead of a fan, you can go on a swing, and then it acts like a fan. Right? All right, and then in the autumn season, we have a lot in the autumn. Rasalila, of course, there's also a spring Rasalila. Lifting Govardhan Hill. Madhya Yashoda tying up Krishna. And then in the Hemanta season, Katyayani Vrata, yes, Krishna stealing the garments of the gopis. And in the foggy season, all I can get so far, all I've been able to find so far, is burning lots and lots of incense. But even our worship of the Lord is supposed to be done ideally according to the season. So this is very nicely explained by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj, when Dhruva goes to the forest. And there's three verses there that are particularly instructive. So it's text 54, 55, and 56 of chapter 8. And Narada Muni first gives Dhruva Maharaj the mantra. What mantra does he give him? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Says one should install the physical forms of the Lord, and with the chanting of the mantra, one should offer flowers and fruits and other varieties of foodstuffs exactly according to the rules and regulations prescribed by authorities. But this should be done in consideration of time, place, and attendant conveniences and inconveniences. This is a purport you often refer to. How that what's proper worship in India may not be proper worship in Iceland, and may not be proper worship in Russia, may not be proper worship in China, may not be proper worship in Mexico. And then he goes on, text 55, one should worship the Lord by offering pure water, pure flower garlands, fruits, flowers, and vegetables which are available in the forest, or by collecting newly grown grasses, small buds of flowers, or even the skins of trees. And if possible, by offering tulsi leaves, which are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this is the only place in the whole Bhagavatam where Srila Prabhupada names one of his disciples. The only disciple he names in the entire Bhagavatam is in the purport to this verse. where he gives thanks to, as he calls her, Srimati Govinda Dasi, for planting Tulsi in the West. And then text 56, it is possible to worship a form of the Lord made of physical elements such as earth, water, pulp, wood, and metal. In the forest, one can make a form with no more than earth and water and worship him according to the above principles. A devotee who has full control over herself should be very sober and peaceful and must be satisfied simply with eating whatever fruits and vegetables are available in the forest. So we have these three verses, 54, 55, 56, and the purports thereof, of that we should offer to the Lord according to what is available. Now there was, when I ran the Gurukul here, I had a policy that the high school kids could request elective courses and that I would do my best to try to develop courses according to their desire. So especially Amrita and Radhe, they wanted a course on interior decorating, so we got a college-level course on interior decorating, and then Amrita Radhe wanted a course in Brahminical life, so we developed that along with the temple. And they also wanted a course in Ayurveda. So I contacted an Ayurvedic institute, and they allowed me to take the course and then to teach my students, and we had to pay for myself. So for 1 year, I studied Ayurveda to teach my students. And one of the things that I learned is that some foods are called a rasayana. Rasayana means that you eat the food and it practically instantly turns into health and nutrition for the body and produces almost no waste. And rasayanas are foods that are grown locally, organically, that are ripened on the tree, ripened on the vine, and are grown according to season. So I eat my main meal cooked by Padma Gopi. And the other, they have a little garden, they're growing some tomatoes, which is not easy here with the squirrels, competition with the squirrels. So she had picked tomatoes from the garden and made a pasta sauce out of these tomatoes and picked herbs from the garden and made this into the sauce. And it was just extraordinary. You just never had anything like that. And I was saying, this is the most first-class offering. You know, we may think that most first-class offering is to get something very expensive from a distant place. But the most first-class offering is what's grown, you know. And I was saying, not only that it's out of your garden, but you grew it. You know, the devotees got the plants and planted the plants and grew the plants, and they're growing the plants, thinking this is going to be offered to Krishna. Like Prabhupada said, anything we pick from a plant, the plant is benefited. When you pick a fruit, you pick a flower from the plant is benefited. So it's grown in that mood. You know, there's also statements in the Shastra that anyone who dies in the area where Shalagram is worshipped is liberated. And imagine the effect on the plants in the garden around the temple. Now, they're not ordinary plants. Just like the Narada Muni cursed Nalakuvera and Manigriva. You know, take birth in Nandamarja's courtyard. Pretty nice curse, right? So the plants that are growing here, they're not ordinary living entities. And then, you know, being picked when they're ripe on the vine, not like the stuff we get in the supermarket that's picked green and ripened with gases and, you know. And then cooked by the devotees with love and offered to the Lord. I mean, there's nothing better than that. You know, my youngest son ran a prasadam business for a long time, making health food bars. And he told me, he said, you know, the food in the supermarket is pretty much figure it's all 6 to 12 months old. He said, because of the distribution system. Right? So sometimes he would give us bars right from the factory. You know, they had grain tidings there. They would offer the food. And the taste was different than what we would buy from a store. Even what we bought from a store in the same neighborhood. You know, because it had this whole system of distribution. That's why during this pandemic, there's been shortages of things. Like, you know, why were there shortages of toilet paper? Because there's two different distribution networks. One is for retail, for the customers, and then one is for, like, restaurants and businesses, and it's a completely different distribution network. That's the same with food. What's happened with food? Someone sent me a video the other day that there are millions and millions and millions of pounds of potatoes that are just being buried in the earth. Because these were destined for restaurants that make, you know, French fries, and they were destined for all different sorts of commercial selling, and that market is closed. And they don't have a system to channel it over to the retail market. So, you know, our present system of food, our present system of flowers, it's all skewed. It's actually a Hiranyakashipu system. It is. That was one of the things Hiranyakashipu did. Hiranyakashipu, when he took over the universe, he didn't respect the ritu. He didn't respect the seasons. And he forced all of the vegetation to produce in all seasons. In all seasons. He forced everything to produce out of season. You know, this is what's happening, of course, in the meat industry also, where they force the animals to mature in 1/4 the time and to grow, you know, 2-3 times as fat as they normally would so that they can't even walk anymore. Right? They're forcing the plants to produce out of season. They're forcing the plants to produce fruits and vegetables which have no taste and no nutrition, but they ripen easily off of the plant and they can ship for a long distance. They force the animals to, you know, they force the chickens to produce a huge quantity of eggs at a very fast rate. They force the cows to become pregnant at a very fast rate and to produce artificially large amounts of milk with milking machines. They force the earth, pouring in all these chemicals into the earth, to force the earth to overproduce. The human beings are being forced to overproduce. Human beings are being put into situations, you know, with artificially controlled environments where they're going to not sleep according to the normal cycles of the earth. And now with our modern technology, you know, you have, you work at work, you work at home, you work on your vacations. Right? Trying to force everything to get out of the natural cycles of life. A natural variety of life. But Krishna enjoys these seasons. Krishna enjoys this variety. Prabhupada always talked about variety is the mother. He enjoys it so much. You know, we think that a vacation, if you're going to go to an ideal place, it's just, you know, you're going to go to Hawaii where it's basically always perfect weather. But Krishna likes this variety. He likes the rainy season. You know, we see the paintings where Krishna's with his beloved under a cloth, right? I mean, it's romantic when it's raining. And you have to take shelter somewhere. Right? Or even in the summer where it's very hot. So the Goswamis describe that in this season here, this Grishma season, and I'm not going to talk that much about Grishma since it's the next few verses are going to go into depth about the Grishma season. I want to talk about seasons in general. But how it's very cool in the caves in Govardhan. And that's fun. You know, it's really hot outside and you get to go in this cooling cave. Or as Jiva Goswami is saying, you get to have water sports. I mean, when I was in Hawaii, one of the problems is it would be really hot in the house, and as soon as we go to the ocean, it's cool from the ocean breezes. You don't feel like going in the water anymore. But it's fun when it gets really, really hot, and you're sweating, and you want to go in the water. And you're enjoying splashing in the water. And then Sanatana Goswami describes how one should serve the Lord according to the seasons. Like in the hot season, you offer him cooling drinks. You know, in the winter season, you offer him warm clothes. That's also one of the festivals, right? Offering Jagannath the woolen garment, and there's that pastime with Pundarik Vijayanidhi and whether or not the garment was starched and so forth. You know, to dress the Lord according to the season, like in the winter, in the dewy season, Krishna and the gopis, they don't wear pearls. Pearls are considered cooling. But in the summer, they're decorated with lots of pearls. You know, and just like we want, and if it's really hot out, we want to have watermelon and we want to have ice cubes in our drink, right? And different kinds of melon, and besides that, and mint. right? And we want to have been your water. So Krishna is also like that. And the residents of Vrindavan, they arrange all of these pastimes according to the season. So they'll arrange, you know, when it's the summer season, then they'll arrange that there's lotus flowers blooming in the ponds and that there's cooling shade in the kunjas. I was just reading in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's book about Vrindavan, how the kunjas are made of four trees at each corner, and the trees grow together and the branches intertwine and they form this roof. Right, so the residents of Vrindavan that are in the form of trees, they make these little shelters for Krishna and his friends. And then the cool breezes blow. Right, not that long ago when I was in the Canary Islands, we were there doing a program. And, you know, it was quite warm. And then you go by the ocean and there's this cooling breeze. And you're like, oh, this is perfect. Right? In the spring, they're throwing flowers and dyes at each other, right? Because spring, Krishna says he's flower-bearing spring. As we're saying, in the monsoon, they're swinging to get rid of the heat and humidity, or they're hiding in the caves. And then the autumn, right? There's dancing. And, of course, the harvest festival, Govardhan Puja, is a harvest festival. So there's each, according in the foggy season, they're counteracting the fog with clouds and clouds of, you know, frankincense and myrrh and these different incenses. And Vrinda Devi comes along with these different coats of different colors for the gopis to wear as they wander in the forest, crimson and brown and some other color to match the colors of the forest. So there's all these services done according to the different season. And Srila Prabhupada also says that in the summer season, that's when in India they decorate everything with flowers. So, of course, there's flower-bearing spring, but the flowers really come into their own in the summer. And it's one of the amazing things in Vrindavan, all the decorations made of flowers. Right? You see, they practically build like houses, temporary houses out of flowers with doors and windows and everything like that. And, of course, for the boat festival, they imitate the mystic place of that was built by Maya Dhanava for the Pandavas, where they put incredible, you know, they put flower petals in the water so it looks like a Persian carpet. Right? You come and you think, as I've been to the Arab countries where you can go to the places where you see these carpets. And at one time in Detroit at the Gurukul, I remember we went to see, do you remember that, Champaka? Remember to see these guys making carpets when they came? And they were demonstrating. They had learned to make carpets from the time they were 8 years old, they said. And they were demonstrating, putting each knot in the carpet. One of them had clothes that were covered with splashes of holy dye, which I thought was interesting. There he was in America with his dye-splattered clothes showing his carpet demonstration. But they put flowers on the water that looks as intricate as tiny little knots in a carpet. And then the boat goes through the water. So decorating with flowers, decorating with water. So Krishna enjoys this kind of variety. You know, we dress the Lord according to the days of the week, whether, you know, there's Monday, this is under the jurisdiction of the moon and Krishna himself, right? And Tuesday is under the jurisdiction of Mars. I used to have Tuesday to give class. That was the war day. Which is also Nisinga Dev, and then Wednesday is under the jurisdiction of Mercury, who's also Buddha, and Thursday is under the jurisdiction of Brihaspati, and also Vaman Dev, and Friday is under the jurisdiction of Sukracharya, and also Parshuram, and Saturday is under the jurisdiction of Saturn, and who's I think it's Korma for Saturday, and Sunday is under the jurisdiction of the sun and Lord Ramachandra. When you go to our temple in Chennai, and I highly advise anybody as soon as, you know, whenever we have a normal world, if we ever get a normal world, and you can go up to Chennai, you go up the stairs, and the stairs to the temple, each stair, each section of the stair is a different chakra. And then you go in the temple room, and the middle of the temple room is the Sahasra chakra. And then each direction, because these different planets and their rulers are also the Dikpatis, they're the rulers of the directions. And in each direction, you have a yantra for the incarnation of the Lord that rules that direction and rules that planet and rules that day of the week. So, you know, to worship the Lord according to the day of the week, according to the season, according to the festival. And then, you know what? We have our own seasons also. That is the system of ashrama, that we have our own season. So when we're young, we worship the Lord by study. When we're in the prime of life, the youthful form of life, then we worship the Lord through our career, like Krishna says to Arjuna, by performing your work, you can become perfect. We worship the Lord by generating wealth for society, by generating good population. Then when we start to come into middle age, the beginning of old age, then we worship the Lord by austerity and by giving advice and counsel to the Lord. And when we are in the last season of our life and we prepare for death, we worship the Lord by purification of our existence. So we also worship the Lord according to season, our own seasons. And our own, when, and what fruits and flowers we naturally bear. You know, there are some trees that give figs and some that give peaches, and some of us serve the Lord in the realm of ideas, some in the realm of government, some in the realm of resources, some in the realm of artistry. And then within those large four realms, we each have our own gifts to offer to the Lord. And that's very beautiful, that everyone is offering the Lord according to their season of life, according to their particular tree of work, according to what they have to offer. And we worship the Lord in the deity form according to the time, place, and circumstance and the season. And we worship the mission of Mahaprabhu also in that way. And then the Lord is playing. We have this krida. He's playing. And our life then becomes part of the play of the Lord. We then experience our own life as part of the lila of the Lord. So I know you're dying to ask a question. Or correct me about something. I could just see it. You know, okay. Mars is going to correct me about something.
Questions.
What's that?
You complain about the Western world, the four things that you've done out of season. But Vrindadevi arranges that all four seasons are there simultaneously.
Six seasons.
In the Vrindavan Park, so isn't she forcing things?
No, but that's one of the... thank you so much. That's one of the places. So you have... Oh, and I had all these stuff to read that I didn't end up reading, but... You have the six seasonal forests. So Krishna and his friends, they wander from one seasonal forest to another. And then there's also a place where all six seasons appear simultaneously. Now, there are natural places like that on this planet. You don't have to force it. On the Big Island, we have all but two of the climate regions that exist anywhere in the world. I think it's 30 different climate regions on that one little tiny island. And as you drive over the mountains, every 10 minutes, you're in a different zone. You're in a different climactic zone. Prabhupada said that the islands of Hawaii were left from another yuga. So even on this planet, we have some places where 30 different climate and flora, fauna regions are existing simultaneously. But yeah, there is a forest where all six seasons exist simultaneously. And then there are goddesses of each season. There's also, in the Bhakti Ratnakara, there's a discussion between the seasonal goddess about how they're going to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And, you know, Vasanta got the time of Mahaprabhu's appearance. Of course, Krishna appears in the monsoon season. But Vrindi doesn't do that artificially. That's persons doing that.
I have another question.
Yes, what's that?
You mentioned that in our lives, we have different seasons.
Yes.
So, I took sannyas when I was 28 years old. Huh. So, am I unseasonable?
Are you unseasonable? Generally, yes. Generally, yes. So
what do I need to do?
Well, nothing. You're fine. But generally, yes. You know, generally we don't advise people to take sannyas early in life. You know, Sankaracharya took sannyas at 8, I think. Madhvacharya at 12. But generally that's not advised. Like now in ISKCON we have this rule, you have to be at least 45.
So what do you
mean? Although Pipa Moyaprabhu pointed out that in most religious systems, the celibate orders are most likely to have their fall downs between 45 and 60 as they go through a midlife crisis. But so generally speaking, we don't advise people to take sannyas when they're young. You know, in Vedic society, it was really heavy. Both the sons and daughters should be married young. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada encouraged, I was just reading Prabhupada's lecture in the first Gayatri initiation of ladies. And on May 7th or 8th, 1968, in Boston. And in the lecture, he starts off going on and on and on about how women should be married. And then he starts talking about how Krishna consciousness is above any material consideration of caste or gender. And then he also mentions, you know, so you go to whatever ashram is suitable, the brahmachari, you know, or grihastha. And then he said to these ladies, these three ladies, he said, or you can stay perpetually in the brahmacharini ashram. After having a whole part of the class about how all women should be married. So if somebody's able to be balanced and happy as a renunciate, then they should do that. And frankly, some people are not suitable at all for the grihastha ashram. It's like some people aren't suitable for the sannyas ashram, and when you put them in the sannyas ashram, they make a mess of it. And some people, when you put them in the grihastha ashram, like Narottam Das Thakur, you know, he wasn't suitable for the grihastha ashram. His parents tried to force him, and it was... So that's also a different kind of forcing. You know, to force people to be married, to force people not to marry. And we have to see what is the natural situation of a particular person and put them in their natural environment. Is that all right?
Yeah, that's good.